up on this episode of the Social Hour, Google Plus Hangouts get broadcastier? Is that a word? LinkedIn turns 10 years old. And all those Snapchat photos, you know, the ones that you're deleting? Well, they might not be deleted after all on your phone or anyone else's. Yikes. All that and paying for YouTube channels. Are you going to do it? Up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 110, recorded May 10th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 900,000 high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SocialHour5. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour. Happy Friday to those of you watching us live from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I am back from Florida. I'm back in Toronto. I have to say, when I got home, I had some great weather, but now it's a little bit rainy, but that's okay. Still warmer than before I left. And yeah, things are going great. How about you, Sarah?
Things are fine. Things are good. I wish we would have a little rain around here, I have to be honest, because the hills are all brown, as California gets at this time of year. So I like your look, though, Amber. I know before the show, I was like, you're sporty spice, because you kind of look like... you're ready for all terrain, you know? You look like you're like about to do like a some sort of obstacle course or something.
It's
and, you know, in style.
I know. You know, it's funny. I have this sort of Nike hoodie on it. It has this weird material on it on the top. It's sort of like K-Way material from those K-Way jackets in the 1980s. So it's got a little retro feel to it. And I've been out shooting stuff all day for, I don't know, just a bunch of random things. So when I got home, you know, it's like hair in a ponytail, hoodie on, and, you know, doing what I love, Sarah, which is sitting in my little home office and talking tech with someone like you. So, it's a comfortable time.
Good. Well, this is, you know, this is one of our favorite parts of the week, Amber and I, because we've got the whole week to look at all the social news and figure out, okay, well, what makes the hour of The Social Hour? Because, of course, that is what this show is all about. So let's start by talking about Google Plus Hangouts. Now, there are Google Plus Hangouts, of course, that you can have with a limited group of people. And then there are also Google Plus Hangouts that are broadcasted. That's sort of the kind of hangout that you might say, come one, come all, I'm about to do this. It's going to be live, much like, you know, the sort of Twit program that we do, although we don't use Google Hangouts here. And what's neat about Google Hangouts is that Google has rolled out an update that allows for live rewinding. So if you were to say, wait, what? Did they just say something kind of cool? It's almost like the Google Hangouts DVR content. And then not only that, but let's say you have brought a bunch of people, you've tweeted out the link, you've blasted out your broadcast channel, and as soon as you're done live, you'd like to have that video archived somewhere so that you can continue to point to it, kind of like on-demand content. What YouTube now will do is it will throw up that contained video up into a YouTube video basically immediately after your hangout is done. So they're basically encoding the whole thing on the fly, which is, it's pretty great, Amber. I mean, I know that Google Hangouts have become really, really helpful for certain people who like to do live broadcasts and bring in a variety of people, you know, to sort of make it a group video chat. But the broadcast functionality seems like Google's really stepping it up. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I have to say, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, that I just love Google Plus Hangouts. I mean, the technology is absolutely amazing. And if you think how far we've come, to have a free tool like this that anyone can use to broadcast live with a bunch of people is just absolutely phenomenal. So just having features like they're offering up in terms of having the live rewind functionality, you know, I think the way they describe it is if you are sitting watching a live broadcast on Google Plus and all of a sudden you miss something because you went to the kitchen or the bathroom, you can rewind. I mean, we're getting closer and closer to the days where it feels like that this is more like television in many ways, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's just really exciting, especially for content creators. So some really neat enhancements here, and one of my favorite parts of Google Plus all around.
I agree. I totally agree. It's funny. It's there's part of me that goes, oh no, everyone will have access to the same tools that we have access to, but we're still kind of a long way from that. But it's also about the good stuff, right? I mean, anybody can do a Hangout. Well, what do you have to say? What are you broadcasting? Should it be broadcast? And that's how you're seeing, you know, people rise in the ranks of YouTube stardom and why certain podcasts do better than others. I mean, it is still very much content-based. It's nice, though, that the barrier to entry is falling every day. So
it is,
if you're interested in something like that, I mean, I think Hangouts is more of an option than it was even when they first launched it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, maybe people don't want to make their own TV shows online, but maybe they have a small agency or company and they want to just be able to go and broadcast and share information. And so it becomes a really fabulous tool for that. Now, Sarah, another thing that happened in the technology or social media world this week is that LinkedIn turned 10, a decade old, and has been kind of fun watching LinkedIn grow over the years and change over the years, and obviously lots of new offerings. And they've rolled out quite a few new features over the past couple of months, including content channels just this week.
What do you think about the content channels, Amber? I was actually at lunch with a few folks and we were talking about LinkedIn and how LinkedIn can be really, really helpful for certain kinds of news. You know, maybe it's not the Twitter breaking news type of a thing. You know, there's not that urgency on LinkedIn, but there is more of a focus on good curated content from people that you trust. Either they're LinkedIn influencers, I think they call them, or people that are actually in your network that are sharing content that you're really interested in. What do you think about actually sectioning LinkedIn content out into specific channels?
I think it's good. I mean, I think the only risk, and I wrote about this, I actually wrote a Fast Company article, which just went online this afternoon and talked a bit about this. I feel there is a bit of a risk. You know, they're churning out a lot of content, Sarah, and I wouldn't say that all of the content is the greatest quality. Obviously, the content they get from some more popular sources, you know, that is good content, that's great. But then they have sort of supplemental content that I feel like the quality just isn't necessarily there. So I think there is that risk that their main business is not necessarily creating content. So all of a sudden, just kind of throwing spaghetti on a wall and to see what sticks. So I don't know. I think I like it, but it sort of mixes up kind of the identity of LinkedIn in some ways. You know, is it a news place? Is it a place where I go to get information? Or is it a place I go to connect? And I know they want it to be both, but I think the content could still be enhanced somewhat, I think.
I think there are definitely people who still say, I mean, LinkedIn's 10 years old, right? The first time I signed up for a LinkedIn account is because I said, I don't want to have to print out resumes anymore. The next time I want a job, I'm just going to point them to my LinkedIn profile. And that's still where my resume is today. It has changed somewhat over the last 10 years, but that's still the number one reason that I have a LinkedIn account in the first place. I think that LinkedIn has had great success, especially with HR departments and businesses that have pro accounts where LinkedIn is actually making some pretty good money, converting people into paying customers. But for individuals, there's still that sort of like, well, LinkedIn is that businessy type thing, and I don't know if it's worth it for me because that's not how I connect to people. But Amber, I mean, the LinkedIn story, first of all, to be around 10 years, hey, you're a real dinosaur, but LinkedIn is really on the up and up, right? It's not one of these aging companies that people say, oh, remember when LinkedIn was relevant. It still really is relevant. They have over 225 million members globally. Nearly 325 million they're pulling down in quarterly revenue. So, you know, that's not even annual. That's quarterly revenue. And it's interesting in this next web article of the registered members on LinkedIn around the world. They're all over the place. You got over 4 million in Australia, over 2 million in South Africa alone, 19 million plus in India. The United States is at 77 million. Canada's at 7 million. Brazil is at 12 million,
yeah.
Not 12 people. So it's, I mean, there are, it's always interesting to see where these networks are thriving. Obviously, Brazil is a huge country, so I'm not surprised at the 12 million. But Brazil is one of these markets that seems to make or break companies these days. You can get popular in a large enough market like Brazil and India, and you're good to go. You don't even have to have a North America presence at all.
Yep, definitely. And, you know, I think one thing about LinkedIn, and as much as I love it and I think that you need to be there, and I have to say I'm really impressed with their mobile enhancements over the past couple of months. Their newly designed app is fabulous. The only thing that I worry about a little bit is that it's so big, right? You know, we talk about these massive numbers, and in some ways I wonder, you know, is it the end of these big social networks? Because at the end of the day, as much as I like going on there and connecting with people, and it says that I have 30,000 plus people in my actual overall network on LinkedIn, I'm still having trouble finding that exact value from the site. And I wonder if, you know, a smaller, more niche network would serve me better as an entrepreneur, you know, a place where I could more target kind of who I want to reach out to, because LinkedIn is just so massive. Facebook is just so massive. And I feel like those social networks may have a hard time in the future. I don't know. What do you think?
I think being everything to everyone is impossible. I think it's partly on the user to curate appropriately. On Facebook, I've had a lot of success, I think, with just managing my own time on Facebook by spending time where I spend some time with my pages, right? So I can look at my little pages tab. That's something that we've talked about in the past. That's what Facebook had introduced, in the last couple of months. And then I can kind of go back to my everybody tab where I'm seeing updates from people that I know now and people that I knew when I was a child. So that's kind of, and you can do that on Twitter as well. I mean, in the morning when I'm on, I can't just read everything that's in my Twitter feed when I'm crunching to find out what all the tech news of the day is. I have to go over to one of my lists and just focus on, you know, just the little stuff. I got to put my tech blinders on. And I think that LinkedIn might benefit from channels like that as well, Amber. But yeah, it is a little bit of a different beast. So we'll have to see, you know, what their next 10 years looks like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think they have a good chance out of all of the big social networks to still be around. And I don't know if I would say that necessarily for everyone. Speaking of social networks, we know that younger generation is definitely flocking to Snapchat, and they may be very interested in this little piece of news talking about their photos, the ones they're deleting or think they're deleting.
Yeah, that's right. So Snapchat is the hot, hot social service with the kids. I say kids just because I don't really know anybody who's using Snapchat that regularly, but it is the idea of temporary media. So I send Amber maybe like a funny photo of myself. Amber's got, and I can say, you've got 2 seconds to look at this, or, you know, up to 10 seconds, I think. I can choose how long Amber has to look at the photo, and then it goes away. Amber could take a screenshot of that photo, but then I would get a notification that she did so. So it actually doesn't really stop the spread of something embarrassing that you don't want to share with the world. But the idea is that you're sending somebody something that's, it's as if we're having a conversation on the street as we pass each other by. You heard it once and then it was gone, type of a thing. Mm-hmm. So it's almost supposed to, in theory, mimic more of an actual transaction between people than this concept of everything gets backed up, everything lasts forever. Well, this is an article over at KSL.com, and this is a news station, that a group of forensic scientists, a firm called Decipher Forensics, has figured out a method to extract supposedly deleted images from Snapchat and pass them on to people who might be interested in that type of information, like, your parents, or law enforcement. It's all about people who would be interested in stuff that might be unsavory or for whatever reason you thought was gone forever. Now, Amber, I don't know about you, but I've always sort of been of the mind that if Snapchat is providing some sort of a service where it's allowing you to share data with another party and then the data goes away, Well, the data had to go through their servers at some point anyway. So there might be some, at least temporary, backing up after that media disappears for both of us on Snapchat's side. So there's already a little bit of a, well, what if, you know, they were subpoenaed in some sort of a case, and how long do they actually have that information? But to know that it might actually be on your local smartphone or tablet or whatever you're using to use Snapchat, that's a whole nother ballgame. Do you think that it's going to deter anybody from using it?
You know, I honestly think Snapchat is one of those tools that I just don't see them being around for a really long time. You know, it just, it seems like a something that's really fun for a while, and kids kind of flock to it. But I think, you know, for reasons like this, as parents get educated more and more about Snapchat and maybe don't like their kids using it as much, and we hear more news about privacy issues and photos being able to be more easily recovered, I think that, you know, a year from now, I'm just not sure we're going to be talking about Snapchat at all. So I hope it deters some people, because I'm afraid that they do think that it is a secure secure exchange of information. But you know what? I mean, nothing is really private when you put it into a format like that. So eventually people have to learn, Sarah, but it does take some time.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking for the tweet now. It was something that was retweeted by somebody in my network on Twitter. I don't remember who originally said it, but it was something about how this woman and her friend haven't seen each other or talked to each other in like a year, best friends, but they Snapchat all day, every day. So there's like this, there's this ongoing communication that's definitely working for some people. But yeah, I mean, Amber, I don't even remember if Snapchat was one of our rad or fads, if we just talked about it as a general news story, but it is going to be very interesting to see if something like this is even around in a year, because it's definitely a fad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, by definition, right? But is it, does it have staying power? And I just don't, you know, I think it's too soon to tell.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I mean, I'd be curious about numbers, if any of the usage is slipping at all. But, you know, it just seems like if something kind of cool and shiny and new comes out in the next couple of months, it could easily replace Snapchat. And that's why I personally would worry if I were running a big social network like Facebook, for example, that, you know, maybe your days are numbered a little bit, you know, not in the short term, but over the next few years, again, just from people being so fickle with some of these online services that they use on a regular basis. And, you know, just going back to talking about LinkedIn, I think with LinkedIn, you know, one thing they have done well is they've been able to kind of monetize with their membership services. And I just think it's sort of a tough business. But we are going to talk about Twitter now, which we haven't talked about on the show yet. And this is kind of a fun story because Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday. I don't know if you have plans with your mom, Sarah.
Well, I do now. Hey, Mom. She watches this show. I'm going to, you know, we'll figure something out. That's going to be great. It's going to be the best Mother's Day ever.
Oh,
what about you, Amber?
Sarah? It's a surprise, right?
Yeah, of course.
You have a big surprise planned. My mom is probably also watching. And she doesn't live in the same city, so I won't get a chance to see her. But I am going home next weekend for a couple of days, so I'll do something with her then. And, of course, being a mom now, you know, we've celebrated Mother's Day for the past couple of years, which has been really fun. My son already gave me my first gift from him, which is this big bouquet made out of tissue paper, and it's really pretty, and he wrote me a very nice card, so he got help writing it, so that was kind of fun. And another thing that's fun, and I'm hoping that we can play this video, but it looks like Twitter sent out this pretty interesting message to people on Mother's Day.
Ooh, yeah, let's see it.
It's changing everything. It's where you go to laugh, it's where you go to cry, where you go to experience and share. Connect with politicians, celebrities, musicians, world leaders, friends, athletes, astronauts, scientists, news outlets, and professors. When there's breaking news, you turn to Twitter. When you want to check global trends, you follow along on Twitter. And when it's Mother's Day, and you want to tell your mother that you love her, you send your mom a tweet saying, "No, stop! What the f*** are you doing? Give your mom a call. Don't look at me like that. You don't need the internet for everything. Twitter will still be here when you get back. But seriously, call your mom." This has been a public service announcement from Twitter, Inc.
That's cute.
Super cute.
I was like, what are they going to tell us to do? This is horrible. Worst Mother's present ever. Mother's Day present is a tweet. That's actually something I would do.
it's really, I mean, it's kind of a fun video, right? And it's neat to see some tech companies. They've historically been doing this, whether it's April Fool's Day or other special days throughout the year, putting out videos like this. I don't think I've seen one necessarily for Mother's Day, but definitely shows, you know, a sense of humor from Twitter. And really just, I think, helps people get back to the idea that, you know what, you should call your mom on Mother's Day. And that's an important thing to do. So I thought that was pretty creative on their part.
You know, I've been getting all the PR emails, Amber. I'm sure you've been seeing them as well.
Oh, yes.
You know, from companies to say, don't forget Mother's Day. Here's a great gift. It's something that you could buy online. Don't have to think about it. We'll ship it by Saturday. But then there's also Facebook gifts, actual real gifts, not virtual gifts. That's not something I've actually been using too much of lately. But every time I wish anyone happy birthday on Facebook, Facebook gently reminds me that I could give them a Starbucks gift certificate. So that's something that you could do for your mother. If for some reason you've got a mom that really spends a lot of time on Facebook, I know a lot of us do.
And I think a lot of moms want gadgets too, right? I mean, I think there are a lot of moms out there who maybe want an iPad or some type of new e-reader or whatever it might be. I mean, obviously, that's always a fun gift to give. Expensive sometimes, but still a fun one.
Well, gee, I mean, up the ante, why don't you? I was like, how about a Starbucks gift certificate from Facebook? And you're like, how about an iPad?
That's well, what I know my mom is watching. I'm trying to give a hint, Sarah.
Thankfully, I already gave my mom an iPad. So I think I'm in the clear.
You're clear now.
Get
perfect.
Some flowers. Hey, a quick reminder that we record the Social Hour live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Amber and I are on different coasts. Can you believe it? The time zones, we're 3 hours apart at any given time, but the show works. That's the beauty of the internet. But if you ever miss one of the shows live, or for whatever reason you can't watch us live, or you prefer to listen to us later, you have all sorts of options. If you go to twit.tv/TSH, that is where our show archive lives. That's where you can get links to subscribe to our show. Subscribing pretty much just means every week we will deliver the show to you via the podcast viewer of your choice. And it was Amber last week, actually. But remember last week, Amber? Oh, so long ago when you were still in Florida. Basking in the sunshine with your family.
Eating ginger snap cookies in front of Sarah, making her jealous.
That's right. Yeah. And so Amber and I talk about a lot of stories on the show, not only news stories, but we've got spotlight services and programs that you might like to try out. And we try to add all of those links to our story pages. So any episode that you go, hey, did they talk about something about 15 minutes in? All of those links should be right there on our episode. So don't worry about it. Enjoy the show. And then you can always check in with us on the website to make sure that you did not miss a thing. And thanks to everybody who watches and listens to us every week and spreads the word to other people who are socially minded like us. Speaking of some spotlights, we have some to get to in just a couple of minutes. But first, we want to thank Shutterstock. Duh. Gosh, it's Friday. Tongue-tied. Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. They're our first sponsor today. With Shutterstock, you have over 900,000, think about that, 900,000 high-quality video clips that'll take your creative projects to the next level. Think about it. If you're putting together some sort of a video, you know, you've taken a bunch of your own video from, you know, the city or town that you live in, you've got all this great stuff, but you need, like a video of a flower blooming, you know, quickly, or a bunch of cars on the freeway. And it's like, how would I ever possibly get that shot? I need like a helicopter or something. There are all of these photos and videos that Shutterstock has at your disposal that you can add to your creative projects. And I mean, not only does it make you look like an absolute pro without really trying that hard, but it's they're beautiful. I mean, this stuff is really, really nice. This could be for your website. This could be for a publication, maybe an advertisement, just some sort of a hobby video, you know, that you're putting together. Jason knows that I love cats, so I might be searching for cute kittens in front of green screens that then I can superimpose in front of something else in my post-production suite, which is absolutely something that I would do. So you've got 2D, 3D animation, you know, motion graphics, a variety of digital formats too. Most come in HD, so you don't have to worry about crappy video. That's not what Shutterstock does at all. It's really, really good stuff. A lot of the contributors to Shutterstock are pros. They're filmmakers, they're animators. And not only that, but Shutterstock reviews each image and video individually and makes sure that they weed out the stuff that's not up to par. So every time you visit, you know that the stuff is good, and they're adding 10,000 video clips each week. So it's not just that it's good quality, it's that you continually get updated good quality videos. So that's really, really interesting. Sophisticated search tools as well. So if you're looking for something very specific, you can search by category, you can search by the resolution, you can search by who contributed it, if you've had good success with a contributor in the past. And if you need to save that with a team, maybe this is not some sort of a personal project, this is a collaboration effort with a group or a team, you can save video assets to a clip box, and then your other team members can access videos in that clip box later. So you can say, oh, just look at some of the stuff that I saved at your leisure, and you can collaborate with your team members that way. Shutterstock is absolutely, well, you can sign up for a free account today. That doesn't require any credit card or anything. You just start an account and you start using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project might look like. And when you decide to purchase, use the offer code SocialHour5. So that's SocialHour and then the number 5, all one word. And new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That is a huge discount, people.
That's awesome.
30% off. Yeah, that's Shutterstock.com. And for 30% off your new account, use the offer code SocialHour5. Again, that's SocialHour and the number 5. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of the Social Hour. As always, you guys are the best. All right, Amber, what about a social tip, huh?
Yeah, for sure. This is a good one, actually. It's very, very simple. I found it on Lifehacker. And I don't know about you, Sarah, but over the years since I signed up for Twitter, many times there are third-party apps that I sign up for using my Twitter credentials to log in. And then I forget about some of those services because I'm trying them out. Maybe I don't use them anymore. And I never really thought about going back into my Twitter account and cleaning up some of those services as far as, you know, getting rid of access to them if I just don't use them anymore. So when I was reading Lifehacker, just realized you could easily go into your Twitter account, into your settings, and then on the left-hand side, you have the option to go into apps, and you'll see all of the apps that you've used before with your Twitter login, and you can deny access to those apps that you just don't frequent on a regular basis. A really simple tip to make sure that you know, you're not necessarily sharing your information with too many services. I think when I went in this afternoon just trying this out, I had like 45 different apps that I was using, and literally I probably only used maybe less than 10 of them.
Oh my gosh, it is a mess. You know, I had this situation a few months ago where in the middle of the night, it wasn't me, in the middle of the night, I had sent out a very strange tweet that was promoting some service. I don't even remember what it was. Twitlife. I don't even remember. You know, one of these third-party Twitter apps. And I probably wouldn't even have realized that tweet went out because, again, it was at a weird time where I was asleep.
Yeah.
But I had gotten enough replies of people saying, geez, Sarah, this is, you know, are you getting kickbacks or, you know, something like that. They were sort of calling me out on some Twitter spam. And I could not figure out what happened. And it turns out that this was a service that I had authenticated with Twitter years ago.
Yeah.
And for whatever, I don't know why, I got very nasty with the company and tweeted at them, and they said, what? We didn't do anything. So who really knows what happened? But the point was is that I should have cleaned out those services that were connected to Twitter a long time ago, because this was a service I couldn't even tell you what they do. Mm-hmm. It didn't make any sense to me why I was even connected to the service at all. But then again, I'm always trying stuff out. You know, there are services that we recommend here on the Social Hour that it's, if it works for you, great. But if it's not something that you're taking advantage of, you don't really need to have it sitting in there in your connected apps. That goes for Facebook as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really, like I said, really, really simple to use. And all you have to do is go on to twit.tv/TSH after the show. And we'll have a link to eventually to the Lifehacker article, just in terms of going in and denying access to a bunch of those different tools. So super simple. You just click on revoke access to the different apps you're not using anymore, and you're all set. So a great social media tip, I think, that a lot of people could really benefit from.
Yeah, I'm actually I'm going to pull up my account right now and freak everybody out with all of the connected applications that I have as well. Even though I do my best, there are all these apps that I've, you know, tried once or twice. I mean, look at all, we've got Days, we've got Riffle, we got Webby People's Voice. Do I really, like,
I know.
What? No, revoke. I don't need that anymore. Twitter Music iOS. Okay, that is something that I use. Cool Iris as well. Everpix. But it's like, it won't take long before I see something that I don't understand. A lot of these are the same thing. Yeah, a lot of these apps. On the Air, enjoy online call-in shows. What is that? Now, it might be something that I actually want, but at least it reminds me to, like, follow up on a few of these. Clipboard.com, the visitor widget, the number one Twitter statistics site. I don't like the sound of that at all. That one's out. You've been revoked. And so on. So this is very, very easy to do within your own account. And like Amber said, it's really, really worth just making sure you know who you're giving permissions to.
Yeah, it's very, very useful. And another thing that may be useful, Sarah, and I don't know if people had listened to our show last week or watched it live, but I will say that we kind of dreamed up the most amazing idea in the world, which is to create Skype filters. I was saying that I could use one of those at the point that we were doing the show, and they do not necessarily exist yet, I don't think. So we were dreaming of different business ideas, and this is where I think this would be really helpful. So this is an app called Elevator, and I think it's playing up the idea of the elevator pitch when you have a new business idea. And basically, it is an app that will help you formulate your business plan. So if you have an idea, you can really easily go into the app and you can fill out a bunch of categories within the app, like the idea, the market that you're going after, the product itself, the business model, and the execution. So it's almost like a brain dump, essentially, for your new business idea. So kind of fun to see an entrepreneurial app like this, and it is free to use.
I love this. Amber, I don't know about you, but I spend a lot of time daydreaming how to become a billionaire, like all those smart people that, you know, that invent things like the, you know, Swiffer and the Roomba. Now I'm just thinking about cleaning products, but there are all sorts of really great ideas, you know, that they had to start somewhere, right? And I didn't go to business school, and so there are a lot of these kind of organizational approaches that an app like this could really, really help people out on. And I love this. It seems like, well, that's pretty obvious, but I can't think of another app that does something the same way that Elevator does. It's got a really clever name, too. That's Elevator, without a couple of vowels at the end. But yeah, that's neat. What's your idea? You know, who do you want to buy your idea? You know, or who are the people who are going to use this product that you're making? What will the product be like, you know, how many people do you need to hire? That sort of, that's all pretty basic stuff that can be really helpful when you're, you know, it's sort of the equivalent of having a big whiteboard and sketching out what your next 6 months look like type thing. Amber, do you have any like cool make a lot of money scheme ideas that could benefit from Elevator? You don't have to tell me which ones they are.
Well, yeah, you know, I think like anyone in this space, I always have ideas. And we talked about this last week, how it's frustrating sometimes where you see people coming out with new apps. We interview a lot of people on the show who are coming out with new digital software services, whatever they may be. And I always have a few ideas up my sleeve, and I never really get to many of them, Sarah, I will say, because I feel like the day-to-day grind of other work just kind of gets in the way. So I think an app like this is fun, where I can just kind of dump some of my ideas and you know, maybe work on them a little bit and just have some fun with it. Skype filters.
I love it. I love it. Elevator. That's something I actually goodie. I should actually write down for my next I-5 show too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Elevator. I guess we'll know if it's worth downloading when I get very wealthy. When Elevator helps me realize my next dream.
Yeah, you know, it's going to happen.
If this tech thing doesn't work out,
it's only a matter of time, Sarah. Remember what was it? The Spinning Hour. Your new series, exercise series?
This is the problem. I had already forgotten about that. One week ago today, and I forgot that that was going to be my next big thing.
Oh, Sarah.
Oh, Amber. Oh, Lord help us. All right, let's move on to some viewer feedback. You know, we were talking about what the kids like. The teens like the Snapchats and this and that. But we actually have an actual teen who is going to tell us like it is. This is Kyle Stewart. He's writing in from Nova Scotia. He says, everybody says that Facebook is dying among youth. He says, I'm doubtful. And I would know. I'm 15 at my school here in Nova Scotia, Canada. Everybody uses Facebook very actively. In fact, every September on the first day of school, the first thing everybody does is add their new classmates on Facebook. It's not just my school. When I go on debating trips, he's on the debate team apparently, to other schools, same thing. Everybody uses Instagram, Vine, Twitter less so. And Snapchat, no one uses Foursquare or Skype. He says, obviously, I'm generalizing, but in general, those just aren't things that high schoolers are using. And then he says, thanks for the awesome show. Thanks for being awesome yourself, Kyle. Amber, I still find it hard to believe that Twitter seems so... I'm not going to say Twitter's useless for, you know, anybody who's around the age of 15, around Kyle's age. But I hear more and more, Leo says that his kids tell him this too, that they're like, Twitter's dumb. Twitter's like Instagram, but way less fun. Instagram is Instagram's where it's at, and you've got the hashtags and the lingo and the whole kind of, you know, nomenclature carries over. But that he's saying Facebook is still a really big deal, but Twitter not so much. Yeah. Why do you think that that's the case?
I think Twitter has always had that reputation with teens, right? You know, Instagram has seemed to have caught on quite a bit. But Twitter, you know, I don't think it's something that they necessarily think is that interesting, maybe because they text so much in their regular lives that it just seems like a very public place where you send out short messages. So, you know, I guess that's not a big surprise. You know, it's very helpful, I will say, to have some feedback like this, because it's hard to kind of figure out what teens are doing these days. And it's fun to have that perspective. So it's really cool that Kyle gave us his feedback. And I will say, Sarah, if you go to Kyle's Twitter profile, he does look in his profile picture, if we can pull that up, and I know it'll be hard for our audio listeners, but he looks like a young Leo Laporte in front of his computer with his headphones on. I think he should do a little video for us and maybe send us some other ideas so we can figure out what's going on in the teen world with social media. Yeah, you guys.
Kyle, Nova Scotia is not treating you well.
Here, you know what I'll do? Just because we have the opportunity to do this, I'll just take a screenshot. I have his picture pulled up. Oh, you guys got it there, I think.
There you go.
Let's see.
He does.
Yeah.
He does look like a young Leo Laporte.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. He's, you know.
Oh my gosh. That's Leo at 15. I mean, we're not far off at all. Kyle, keep at it. That's awesome. He's also on the debate team, so he's probably... He and Leo could actually have a lot of fun.
And he says he likes reporting. So I am encouraging Kyle, if he's listening, to send us a really short little video, you know, on a regular basis maybe, and letting us know what teens are doing in the social space. Because not only are teens watching, I hope, or people in their 20s, but also parents just curious and trying to figure out what's going on in that world.
Amber, I know I've said this before, but Snapchat is always it's the great example of the service when... Once it launched, because I'll try anything, right? Part of it is our job because we want to make sure that we're on top of stuff. But I also just enjoy social tools. I think they're just, for the most part, they're good for communication and keeping in touch and having fun and sharing photos. And I love it. Snapchat is tough for me to get my head around because I'm so used to, it's been etched into my brain that everything should be backed up. You know, that's what cloud services are for. We want everything to last. I want everything to be accessible. The idea that a photo would somehow disappear hurts me. Because what if I put a lot of effort into it? That sort of thing. So it's like, I'm sort of like, have I turned the corner? Have I finally gotten to the age where I don't get it anymore? I think I get it. I hope I do. But yeah, it's always a good exercise for people of different generations or even decades, right? To figure out how... how people of different ages are using these tools, because it's not always the same story.
No, it's definitely not. And it's great getting insight from someone who's actually experiencing it and going through it at this very moment. Now, we also have another email. This is from Nicole, who emailed us with a link to a service called, how would you pronounce this? Ephemer.
This is actually, this is, we're talking about Snapchat. It's perfect because the idea behind it's E-F-E-M-R. How would you all pronounce it, chat room? I'm looking at you. Let's see if you can phonetically give us the details. The idea is if you use Ephemer, let's just call it that, instead of the web Twitter, just the web client, right? So you go to ephemer.com. And you go ahead and give it credentials. This is something that you would give it credentials to sign up as a third party that talks to your Twitter account. And you tweet through Ephemer rather than Twitter itself and add a hashtag like #5M, which would mean 5 minutes. That tweet will only live for 5 minutes. Once the 5 minutes is over, it disappears as if it was never there in the first place. Now, we know from... in fact, this all kind of came to a head, the idea that people said, well, listen, if you have a tweet that goes out into the world, anybody can see it, anybody can screenshot it, that sort of thing. And for whatever reason, this happened a lot during the unfolding of the Boston bombings, where there was a ton of misinformation that was floating all over the internet. And sometimes people would say, ooh, I just sent out something that's actually not correct. I'm going to go ahead and pull that tweet. Well, it's already been retweeted, and now you've broken the chain. So somebody sees that retweet and goes, oh, my gosh, okay, now this is fact. So the retweet already lives. But even if they come back and check, your original tweet is gone, and that can get weird. It's like, well, why is the tweet gone? Is it gone because it was wrong? Is it gone for another reason? Now, Ephemer is not going to solve your problems as far as retweeting goes. But if, I don't know, you were... I mean, what if it was some sort of like a business scavenger hunt, right? So like us as Twit, you know, maybe on our Twit Live Twitter account would say something like, okay, you know, throughout the day, sometimes we'll be posting hints as to where you can catch our super secret next show. And you got to watch the tweet stream because the tweets don't last that long.
Yeah, that could be kind of fun.
Yeah, I see how this could actually be somewhat useful in certain cases, but maybe not the Snapchat for Twitter.
Yeah, I see how it could be abused. I see how it could be used in a smart way. I see a bunch of different scenarios with this. And I think the lesson at the end of the day is that, you know, once you put something out there, obviously it's easy for people to be able to copy it. But yeah, kind of interesting to see services like this out there. And it obviously makes me think that more and more people like this idea of things kind of appearing and disappearing more easily online. So very cool. And thank you so much to Nicole for sending us that. Looks like a neat service.
I agree. Thanks, Nicole. This is a good one. I hadn't seen it before. You know, earlier in the week, Amber, on TNT, we talked about a service called, what was it called? Twivo, T-W-I-V-O. And the idea was that, this is great, it was actually very, very helpful. It was created by a 17-year-old girl who lives in New Hampshire. She had entered a hackathon in Boston and won the hackathon. The idea is to enter in the name of a show that you do not want spoiled on Twitter. So, you know, in this age of cord cutting, we're not all watching shows at the same time. I know for me, I buy a season pass of Mad Men on iTunes, which is perfectly fine. But all the people who watch it on AMC on Sunday, I don't want to know anything because I don't get it till Monday. That's just the way that iTunes' schedule works. I can't download it to basically midnight, Sunday night. And it's very helpful because every once in a while someone will say something, and even if it's vague, it's enough so that when I see the scene the next day, I'm like, yeah, I kind of knew this was coming. Yeah. So the idea is like, yeah, you enter the term and her service, Twivo, just makes it poof, disappear until you're ready for it to come back again. So it's temporary scrubbing and muting of spoilers. Which
that's
is just
interesting.
Isn't that great?
Huh.
Yeah, I know. Which further just shows us there are all these neat third-party services that make Twitter more useful, depending on how you like to use Twitter. And I just wonder how long it'll take before Twitter builds a lot of these tools internally.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see them doing that. We also got another email, and this one is from Frank, who says, hi, Sarah and Amber. I thought I would bring a new social network to your attention called Bleat. The social network is for vegans, for people who are curious about a vegan lifestyle, and I know that's a lot of people. The site has articles, recipes, events, campaigns, groups, organizations. You can also find local businesses, such as restaurants that are vegan friendly. I believe the site is run by a team of three out of the UK. I thought this was relevant because you guys were talking about niche social networks last week, and thanks to Frank for sending us that. And you know what? I have not heard about a vegan social network before, but I know quite a few people who are opting to go vegan, and it looks like there's some really interesting stuff here.
I agree. You know, and it is in beta. I think Frank mentioned that in his email to us as well. So it's brand new. However, and we were talking about specific social networks last week. Mm. We were talking about beauty networks and the fact that you can, you got the right topic that a lot of people are interested in, and you've got your network built in right there because it's sort of the passion of the community that wants to be part of that network.
Something big is about to happen.
Oh, this is the promo video for Bleat, which is B-L-E dot A-T. This is cool, though. Okay, so this is sort of their, like, hey, this is what Bleat is all about. It's actually very well done. And I like it, Amber, because I am not a vegan, but I know people who are, and I hope I'm not speaking for them incorrectly when I say it takes quite a bit of effort to be vegan, especially when you're eating out or you've got, you know, friends who want to cook for you and don't quite understand what can't go into the recipes and so on. And so you've got this specific thing that is a part of your life all the time. It's not like a hobby. It's actually something that you think about constantly. And those are the sorts of areas that make such good social networks, because people really, really care about it. You know, it's not like, what's your favorite color? It's like, what are you going to eat later? And something that, for many people, veganism can be a health choice, but it can also be a moral choice. So I think that this is it's a really, really good idea. And it also is set up very nicely. I mean, this doesn't look like some homegrown social network. It's very pro.
Yeah, no, it looks really slick. And it's neat that they do have recipes and all this other information. So even if you are not entirely vegan, you may find some of the recipes interesting. And it does have kind of a Pinterest-y feel to it, too, on the homepage. And lots of good features and functionality, too. So this is definitely a good one. And thanks to Frank for sending that over to us.
You know, there's one of my favorite chefs, Amber, and a food critic. His name is Mark Bittman. He has a couple of recipe iPad apps that I use all the time. He's got this new, I'm sort of going on a crazy rat hole right now, but he's got this new book and lifestyle thing out called like V46 or VB6. And the whole idea is being vegan before 6 p.m. because if that means basically you're vegan all day and then for dinner you eat what you want, as long as you're, you know, being somewhat sensible. And he's lost all this weight and he's like, this is the way to go. And it's not really for any reason besides just, you know, he wanted to lower some blood pressure and be healthier. And so there are, even though I'm not a vegan, I think that there are some really good reasons that you might want to pursue at least knowing a little bit more about it. So sounds like Bleat would be a good place to start.
Yep, definitely.
All right, reminder that we love hearing from you. Thanks to everybody who contributes articles and ideas and social networks that Amber and I might not see otherwise. It's so, so helpful. You can tweet at us. You can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail, of course, at 2626-SOCIAL. Do use that if you want to send us any sort of audio or video response. We don't want to open attachments, so for the audio feedback, 2626 Social is our Google Voice inbox. Very helpful. Please do ring us up and send us a little voicemail. Or you can record a video and upload it somewhere and send us the link on YouTube or Vimeo or something like that. Thanks in advance to everybody who's going to help us with next week's show as well. All right, Amber, I want you to get ready for your rad or fad. It's always the best part of the show. And while you are doing so, let's take a moment to thank our second sponsor, SAP, for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love social media solutions from SAP because it just makes sense. I mean, the people who are watching the show, many of you work at enterprises. You're the social media. You've got to handle all of the feedback that people are giving you about your product or suites of products. And you know that the larger your enterprise is, the more of a challenge it can be to just keep on top of what people are saying. Do they like your product? What do they want to change? And how you can answer them. Social Media Solutions from SAP improves customer service and the support experience by helping companies use social media to reach out, answer questions, and make the products better. Because, okay, where are people talking about your product? Might be on a personal blog, certainly might be on Facebook, maybe Twitter. Yeah, you might have keywords set up, but that only takes you so far. And you got to keep on top of the conversation. Social Media Solutions has two components. The listening component. That's the component that ingests all of this data. Who's talking about you? What are they saying? Are they angry? Are they happy? You want to build better products, right? You need to know the sentiment of what's being tweeted, for example. Natural language processing is something that SAP puts together. They like to call it NLP, that automatically knows the differences between sentences that seem really similar. You know, if you're saying that the app has never been good, well, they don't like your app. If they're saying the app has never been this good, that means the app just got a lot better. And those are two very different things. And that is helpful, you know, to send back to your product team, right? Then there's the engaging component. That's the component where you are reaching back out, helps you improve customer support and service by allowing you to set rules about which messages are getting routed to which member of your team, who is going to deal with the stuff, who's going to make sure that this unhappy customer gets some sort of a fix for her problem. Activity on social media, Twitter, Facebook, some sort of a review site can help lead to direct customer engagement. You can drive sales. That's good that people like that. You can quickly solve customer problems. And of course, you can just respond to customers more quickly than if you're just kind of trying to monitor by keyword here and there and hoping that nothing falls through the crack. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing because it improves the customer service and support experience. And you work in the enterprise, you know how important that actually is. Go to sap.com/twit and you can take a guided tour there. You can see more for yourself how Social Media Solutions from SAP might benefit your company. sap.com/twit. And we thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, it is time. It is time for Rad or Fad.
Yeah, you know, this is a good one because I think in the social media world, at least today, there's probably no bigger news than the fact that YouTube is now going to be offering content channels that you can pay a subscription for. And, you know, kind of interesting to see YouTube do this. And if users will, in fact, pay for some of this content, they've just launched with a little more than 50 different channels. It includes a variety of content, yoga videos, kids shows, and the list kind of goes on from there. And they're hoping that, you know, people will cough up the money. And in some cases, it's pretty inexpensive, a couple dollars a month. And I don't know, is this rad or fad, Sarah? What do you think?
Well, I think definitely depends on the content creator. But, you know, you mentioned yoga. And that got me thinking because I think that so many of us have gotten very used to the idea that YouTube, there are some pop-up ads, sometimes there are some pre-rolls, but everything is free. So you start saying, well, what about $1 per month for your favorite channel? And people go, $1 per month? This is highway robbery, even though it's obviously not very much money in the grand scheme of things. People don't want to start paying for something that they've gotten for free. I understand. So I think that for some content creators, this is going to pose a challenge to convince people that it's worth it. But for something like, let's say, a well-produced exercise show, or perhaps, you know, fashion tips, or something that already does very well on YouTube, then you get into a situation where as long as it's really good content, you will find people that would pay $1 a month. If I only have to pay $1 a month to take daily yoga classes, I mean, do you know how much money I would save not going to a yoga studio? And that's something that, you know, on a YouTube app that I can watch through in my living room. You know, I move my coffee table and I'm looking at it on my big TV. That sounds great. Right now, I'm already paying $1 a month for a French language learning app on my Roku, which is, it's fine, you know, but I mean, I'm paying for it because I don't feel like I can really find anything like that anywhere else. So I think that, Amber, we're getting to the point now where people don't equate YouTube with silly videos that are homemade and were uploaded, you know, just so you could laugh and never look at it again. There is episodic, good quality content, and clearly YouTube wants us to take it seriously enough to pay for it.
Yeah, you know, and I think in the early days of apps, many people said, oh, people are never going to pay for apps. There's so many apps available for free. And as years have gone on, people have been willing to pay for apps and probably even have their own little app budget set aside to be able to afford them on a monthly basis. A couple of areas I think that this is going to work. One is around exercise videos, like you mentioned, and learning new languages, that type of thing, things you usually pay a lot for. Also, I think for kids' content, because if you search YouTube as a parent, what you'll find is all of a sudden you search for maybe your favorite cartoon character, your kid's favorite cartoon character, and these videos pop up, and then there's a voiceover where someone's swearing on top of them, or right, they've been remixed. I mean, it's so frustrating. So I could see parents paying for this, perhaps. And in fact, if you look through the list of some of the different content categories, you'll see a couple of, at least a few, actually, channels that are targeted towards kids. The only thing I wonder about is with Netflix and other services that already offer a lot of this content for sort of a flat rate, mm-hmm, is it going to be difficult to have these kind of one-off channels instead of a collection of channels, right? So I think that's where it becomes something that maybe this is going to evolve or have to evolve. But I do think it does make sense in some ways for YouTube to really get into this game.
Well, and then you've got people on the flip side of this, you've got people like my own mother, love you, Mom, who says, gosh, Netflix has the worst movies. Every once in a while, I find something that I want to watch, but sometimes I pay, you know, my monthly subscription fee, and I don't want to watch anything. So this works better for people who are frustrated, even with a la carte options, because there's still a little bit too much bundled in, really. So it's like, I want that show. That's the show I want. It's going to start at 99 cents per month. Some of these shows, it's not necessarily every show is going to be $1 per month, by the way. That's just, you know, it sounds like that's the lowest offering, which, you know, that's the price of an app. And yeah, if you're going to make use of it, well, depending on the kind of content you like to consume, you might end up saving a lot of money this way. And it's YouTube, and for better or for worse, that's where most of the content is. I mean, if you want the biggest variety of content in one place, it's certainly on YouTube. And as you mentioned, Amber, there are related videos that tend to get weird, right? Especially if you've got, mm-hmm, you know, kids programming, then it turns into like, oh, this is a parody video. This is not what we wanted at all. This is, it's sort of off on some other tangent. You can almost pay. It's almost like paying for, you know, verified content, right? I know what I'm getting here. This is actually a trusted channel.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think in that case, for a rad or fad, I think it is kind of rad. And I don't think that we're going to see this die overnight. I think it's just going to evolve over time. And YouTube will be able to figure out, based on people's viewing habits, what's going to work, how much people are going to pay. There is a 2-week period when you sign up for these channels that you can watch for free. I believe it's for 14 days. And then it is required that you have to pay. So I don't know. I think a big opportunity here. You know, there's so much happening right now in online content. I think the people who I wouldn't necessarily want to be is people who are just betting on kind of broadcast television right now, because I think that's a tougher play as far as even advertisement and subscription revenue.
Sure, and YouTube is trying very hard to say, hey, advertisers, yes, we know that you like 60 Minutes and the old media shows that have proven themselves decade after decade, but we've got stuff that everybody wants, and this is the place that you should be putting your ad dollars into.
Yeah, right, it's going to be about the quality, though.
We've got a rad this week. We think YouTube paid subscriptions are rad.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think as they figure out that having that really good quality content, which is exactly what Netflix has done when they've come out with their new series like House of Cards and other things that they're producing, they've recognized that having really great content is what is going to sell at the end of the day. So with YouTube, I think it is finding those channels where the content is absolutely fabulous, is not available anywhere else for that price point, and then they'll have a win on their hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I try to do this regularly just because, you know, we're in the same line of work, so I like to know who our competition is, Amber.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there are YouTube stars that I find all the time, and who even knows where I find half of them? You know, sometimes it's by accident. I look at their channel and go, 6 million views? Wow. And then I watch a video and I go, I like her. She's really funny. So, you know, it's I think discovery is probably the next frontier for YouTube. You know, they need some sort of almost like a better channel guide, right? They have that, of course, but there's so much of it. There's probably eventually going to be sort of a, here's the YouTube, you know, premium, and then here's all the other stuff, you know, for everybody who has a YouTube account that, you know, wants to upload a video every once in a while and share it on their Google Plus network. Well, Amber, we've come to the end of our hour. As social it has been, we try to keep it to an hour to not overwhelm everybody too much. But it was a fun one. Reminder that we are live. If you'd like to join us live and chat with us and tweet at us in real time, we do shoot the show at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, right here at the TWIT Network. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. And you can find our show... Well, you know, once you subscribe, you don't really have to go out and find it anywhere. But if you're an iTunes user, you can go ahead and subscribe to us on iTunes as well. Try to make it as easy as possible for you to enjoy the show each week, whether you watch us on video or you listen to us on your commute or some other way. Thanks to everybody who watches and listens every week. We will be back here next week at the same time in the same place. Until then, I'll be Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.